Good afternoon. You picked a good time to be listening. I have a jam-packed program today. Let's head out on the wine road.
We're going to come out with new labels, a new look, and kind of a new story that is the story of me and my sister and our generation and future generations of our family.
There's so many different regions of California that are producing amazing Zinfandel, the Sierra Foothills, Paso Robles, Mendocino, and then of course us here in Dry Creek Valley. So it'll be really interesting to see and meet all the other members.
Coming up on today's show, I have an interview that I'm happy to be sharing. Family member and owner of Paradise Ridge Winery in Santa Rosa, Renee Bick, joins me to announce the news of their reopening following the 2017 wildfires. Renee talks candidly and shares quite a bit of detail about the new tasting room and intriguing changes they're making. Then I'll travel north to Geyserville to meet up with first-generation American-Italian winemaker and grower Joe Ramazzotti and his son Travis of Ramazzotti Wines. Needless to say, being a grape grower in Dry Creek and Alexander Valleys, they craft Zinfandel. You'll hear about their family history and wine, and we'll discuss the upcoming Zinfandel Experience, ZinX 2020, occurring January 30th through February 1st in San Francisco. A couple of other Zinfandel winemakers will also be appearing on the wine road in the coming weeks as we approach ZinX 2020. I'm Jeff Davis. Thanks for tuning in. On the Wine Road is sponsored by Smothers European Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa, family-owned businesses since 1982 on the Corby Auto Row, by Sonoma Clean Power, sourcing cleaner electricity and delivering programs that fit your lifestyle. Sonoma Clean Power, innovation grown locally. By On Fire, fireplaces and outdoor kitchen showroom, a specialty store that focuses on beautiful fireplaces and outdoor living spaces for homes, businesses, even wineries, on Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa. And by Bottle Barn, where wine country buys wine, on Industrial Drive north of Piner and bottlebarn.com. Speaking of Bottle Barn, we're teaming up to tempt you to join in on Open That Bottle Night. It's an annual date that gives you a reason to open a special bottle you may be hanging on to. Sure, there are always anniversaries, birthdays, a new child, but sometimes a special bottle may still be waiting to be opened. And this year offers more of a reason to celebrate. Open That Bottle Night occurs on the last Saturday of February, and since 2020 is a leap year, the extra day is the 29th on Saturday. So I'm asking you, my beloved listeners, to take a picture or just post a note on my Facebook page, On the Wine Road, about the bottle you'll be opening. Now, it doesn't have to be an older vintage or an expensive bottle, just something you feel is worthy of Open That Bottle Night. Of all the posts, I will choose a winner to receive a really nice gift package, compliments of the wonderful guys and my sponsor, Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa. And I'll pick a winner in time for them to receive the package to use on Open That Bottle Night. I'll have more details on the gift package in the coming weeks. This will go on until February 22nd. I hope to hear from you. Post at facebook.com/onthewineroad. Now let's head over to Paradise Ridge Winery in Santa Rosa. I wanted to have a casual conversation with owner and family member Renee Bick, so instead of using my usual handheld recorder, I opted for lapel mics so we could kick back on the leather couch in their new tasting room. I've come to know Renee pretty well over the last few years and was devastated when I heard the production facility and the tasting room burned in the October 2017 wildfires. It was a real pleasure to join him finally in the new space.
So good to sit with you again.
Yeah.
It was so funny. A few weeks ago, I was in the neighborhood, thought I'd come by and see how the progress was going on the building. And much to my surprise, it was the first day of your soft opening.
Yeah. We opened on December 9th and happy that that date is behind us. And now we're settling into the new digs and getting acquainted with everything.
Boy, it's been an interesting couple of years, huh?
It has. It's been pretty much of a grind the whole time, and it doesn't seem to be letting up at the moment, but hopefully we can get some of these attorneys and lawyers and insurance stuff behind us.
Another thing you want to get behind you.
Yes.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm impressed with the property. I mean, we can talk more about this a little bit later, but It's very much the same footprint. We've talked about this before.
Yes, it is.
But certainly more modern, and not surprisingly, some amazing artwork behind your tasting bar there, which is you're well known for your artwork on the property. So
yeah, you know, it's a place. When we rebuilt it, we really wanted it to people to feel like they were coming back to a place they had been before, and I think we accomplished that. It has a really similar look and feel, but like you said, more modern, and we got to kind of change some of the stuff that didn't work out as well the first time around. So we're happy to be back here, and we've had a lot of people coming in who are club members, people who've been married here before. There's a couple in yesterday. They got married 25 years ago.
Wow.
And they were sharing some pictures about that.
Wow.
So that was pretty cool to see how it looked even before the first remodel, which we did about 10 years ago. So, and a lot of people are really, really happy. And there's a lot of people who are still rebuilding their homes that are also coming up and really happy that we've opened. Mm. And it gives them, you know, I think a little bit more strength and motivation and excitement to get their houses done too, because there's a lot of people still in the rebuilding mode.
Yeah, from the outside, it's you think, well, you did a great job. This 2 years went by pretty quick, at least for me. But but it's very comfortable to be back here.
Yeah, well, I have to give kudos to my sister Sonia, who is the one who is the look and feel and all the colors and all the textures and the artwork and how things are set up is something that she does a very good job at, and we've had wonderful feedback from everybody who's visited us about how beautiful the place is, which makes those 2 years, while they're in the past, but it makes us feel better about, you know, the grind that we went through, and now we're getting some even more positive feedback from people, and it'll give us, you know, the strength to keep going through everything we're going through until, you know, we're kind of up and running at 100% and all the homes on the property are rebuilt and all the buildings are rebuilt, which is not the case right now, but it's in the progress.
A couple more homes on the property?
Well, we're on home number 2. My dad is, and there's going to be 2 more homes built. And so he's almost halfway through of building of homes, and so have our winemaking facility that we are planning on building as well. And but this was the event hospitality center was our concentration. It's what most people were familiar with our property. It's where we host events and our tasting room, and that had the number one priority of getting up and running, and now we'll work on some of the other stuff.
You mentioned Sonia, and we were just talking about her husband, who is your winemaker.
Yeah.
So this is a true family business, isn't it?
It is. You know, my sister and myself run the day-to-day operations. Her husband, Dan, is our winemaker. And we have other family members that work here, some of our staff, and have their kids working here. And so it does feel like a big family. See, Paige walked in, and that's her daughter.
Uh-huh.
But we're open to, you know, we are a family and we welcome families.
And then I saw Annette when I was here last too. She's still working here.
She works here. Her son Chris works here. Her son Michael worked here. And before the fires, we had Martha, our event manager, and her husband worked here. And so we've had a lot of family members working here. And it's just part of our culture.
And I was happy to see Walter too when I came by that day a few weeks ago, and he's hanging in there, isn't he?
He's hanging in there. He's, well, this year, what's his, 2020, he'll be 88 this year.
Wow.
And he's still running around with all these projects and keeping busy and enthusiastic about it all.
Oh, great. That's got to keep him going too as well, I imagine.
Yeah, dude, he loves projects. He likes making things better and prettier, and that's what he's been doing. And you know, obviously this building turned out well, and his houses he's really happy about. So, and I think he's actually going to move up here on the property in the second house when he finishes that, which will be nice because he comes here every day anyway. Might as well live here.
Right. Now, were you ever a project for Walter?
Me? Uh-huh. A project? Yeah, I'm a project.
Has it been a while? Are you still a project?
Well, you know, there's five kids in our family, so there's, you know, he has different opinions about the different kids, but it's nice to be able to see him all the time and work here, and it's something that I enjoyed with my mother when she was around as well, that, you know, it's time that I can never really feel bad about spending. And working and spending time with my family is something that's very nice and I enjoy. Most of the time.
I think we could all say that.
Yes.
When the fire occurred, the production facility burned as well.
Yeah.
And it was early October. By now, you lost some wine. Was there juice in the fermentation tanks at that time still?
Yeah. We had just harvested and started fermentation of the 2017 harvest when the building was destroyed. So a lot of people were happy to hear that we harvested our grapes, but the whole building was... So we lost about almost 9,000 cases of wine, but we store a lot of our finished goods off-site, so we still had finished goods off-site, and then we were able to get some juice from different wineries that offered to help and support us so we can continue some of our programs that are more one-year program, like a Sauvignon Blanc and a Rosé. Those are things that, when they were gone, we really needed to replace, or we'd lose some of our shelf space, which is kind of important to a lot of wineries and businesses. So we lost the winemaking facility, the hospitality center, three homes, four other structures, and we're about halfway rebuilt.
The vineyard survived, though, which they often do, and all of your artwork, surprisingly.
Yes.
You've got plenty around the property. That was the biggest miracle of the whole thing.
I think so, too, is that all the artwork pretty much survived. The vineyards, even though initially we thought we could have lost 20% of the vineyards, our 2018 harvest was larger than normal. We replanted some of the vineyards that were affected. We're also replanting some of the vineyards that we were planning on replanting as well. So some people look out, and there's a new vineyard out in front, and that was a planned replant that was not caused by the fire. It was more an opportunistic time to replace a vineyard that is important to a lot of our brides and people who have events here. They want to see vineyards. So when we had 2 years of no events, we thought it was a good time to replant. A
nicely placed vineyard setting, huh?
That's right. So we've replanted some of our late ripening reds with Zin, Petite Syrah, and some Syrah with Chardonnay, which is probably better for our spot here in the Russian River Valley.
Hmm. Yeah. Did I see a couple pieces of new artwork the last couple of times I've been here?
There is some new artwork. The main one actually came in fairly soon after the fires. I want to say in early 2018 we got Storied Haven, which is the big boot. It looks like Mother Hubbard's boot or whatever. Uh-huh. And so that's new. And obviously the piece behind the bar, which is probably our finest piece that we commissioned for to be built.
Let's tease my listeners a little bit and not say what it is, and see if when they come, if they can figure out what that represents.
What I can say is some people think that it's some of the leftover materials that we were able to salvage from the property, and that's not what it is.
Right. It's much too clean for that.
But it's something that we had Monty, a local artist, put together. We're really, really happy with it. It's a signature piece behind our tasting bar. It's called Cooper's Crest. That'll give you a little insight. It would be great if you could come up here and take a look and enjoy that, as well as the views and the wine.
Yeah, as you stand there at the bar and taste, you're looking right at it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
He's Renee Bick of Paradise Ridge Winery in Santa Rosa. If you're familiar with the grounds, you know art is a major component of the winery. They also proudly share details about the history of the Fountain Grove area, which includes Japanese immigrant Kaye Nagasawa, who contributed much during his lifetime in Santa Rosa. They had an extensive display in the hospitality center that was tragically lost in the fire. However, the story doesn't end there. We'll touch upon that and hear about the family's near future plans as we continue On the Wine Road. On the Wine Road continues here on KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis, sitting with Renee Bick of Paradise Ridge Winery. We're discussing the newly rebuilt hospitality space following the 2017 fires and a prized possession that was feared lost forever, the samurai sword of Kaye Nagasawa, the Japanese immigrant who helped shape the Fountain Grove area. They were able to find the sword, which was an emotional discovery for the Bick family, and it is now once again on display.
Yes, that is how the sword was found. It was our first objective in debris removal, was to try to locate the sword. We had a lot of people reaching out to us telling us that the samurai sword should have survived the fire. So, and when we found it, it made some national and international news, especially in Japan, that sword was found, and it's part of our display.
Tells an even deeper tale.
Yeah, and it's something that we're proud of, the history, Nagasawa's history, and that we get to tell his story about him growing grapes up here in the Fountain Grove area, you know.
In the 1800s,
in the 1870s and 80s, they were growing grapes up here, and there's a huge influence that the Asian community had on the California wine industry that a lot of people are unfamiliar with, and so we proudly tell that story about Nagasawa, but also about their influence in creating the California wine industry.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice display we have there on the wall.
Yeah.
Getting back to the vintages, so you did have some white and rosé
2017.
Did any reds come out of that, or...?
We were able to, we buy some fruit from the Rockpile AVA and from the Rockpile Vineyard. Mm-hmm. And after the fires, Rockpile wasn't affected, and there was still some fruit that was yet to be picked up in Rockpile. And we work with the Wilson family, and Ken and Diane Wilson, and they let us pick some grapes that were earmarked for somewhere else so we can have some reds for the 2017 vintage. So we did that, and then... unfortunately, with this last fire, the Kincaid fire, they lost the Soda Rock Winery.
Right, the Wilsons,
I've met with Ken and trying to help with giving some insight in the whole jumbled mess that happens when your winery burns down. We're unfortunately, some of the only people to have experienced that, so I want to give that information to Ken and Diane on how to avoid some of the pitfalls that we felt with the fires.
Felt and are apparently still feeling from what you were telling me yesterday.
Yes, no, we are still feeling the effects. It's a difficult time. But you know, we're optimistic that in the end that we'll come out of this feeling good about what we've done in the past and the future. You know, one of the other things that we've been doing in this 2 years besides rebuilding is also we've relooked at our brand, and we'll be coming out with some new packaging and some new branding in the spring. And I don't think I've told anybody that, so that's breaking news.
Great.
But we're going to come out with new labels, a new look, and kind of a new story that is the story of me and my sister and our generation and future generations of our family. And we had been telling the story of my parents in the past, which we will never obviously forget. But, you know, we've come to realize that the community is very supportive of us. And a lot of people look at us as a gathering place to come with their families. And that's something we want to embrace, and supporting the arts and supporting nonprofits and, you know, being sustainable, not just in growing of our grapes, but in paying of our employees and taking care of our entire property. So there's you know, another thing that's new that we started last year is we got a lot of grazing here on the property. So we're keeping the grass short with goats and soon to be cows and sheep.
Wow.
And we had some sheep here last year in our vineyards, and we're going to continue that program. And the Girl Scouts even came up and planted a bee habitat, because a lot of the bee habitat was destroyed in the fire. So we like to be good stewards of the land and give back, and I think people like and appreciate that and then want to support us even more, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Everybody wins when that happens.
Right, right.
So I feel like we have a lot to offer a lot of different people, even people who don't drink. And have a great wine country experience here.
Right. That's the great thing about this property. You can come spend a couple hours here easy without even tipping a glass.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we like to share. It sounds kind of funny, but it's something that we enjoy. And after the fires happened, we got a lot of people telling us how much they enjoyed our property. And it wasn't just about the wine. It was about the place and the people and supporting of the arts and nature and all of that kind of has worked out well, and we plan to continue to do that. And my parents, the Sculpture Garden is always going to be free, open to the public to enjoy.
Renee Bick of Paradise Ridge Winery. Now that they're back in operation with a new modern facility, it may come as no surprise that some positive changes will be in place, ultimately to benefit you, the consumer.
We do recommend that you make a reservation when you come and visit us, because in the spring we'll roll out some new tasting experiences, and we're feeling like we're going to be busier this summer than we were before the fires, and we want to be able to make sure people have the experience they want. So it's highly recommended that you make a reservation so we can make sure you're taken care of properly, and I believe and I hope that we will be full, and sometimes we might not be able to accommodate people if we're too busy. So to ensure that you have a nice experience up here, it is recommended that you let us know you're coming.
Glad you mentioned that.
But this is a place where you can have a glass of wine and watch the sunset and bring your family and friends, and we are kid friendly. So it's something that I've noticed since we've reopened, that we've gotten more families, you know, which I have young kids I was telling you about. I got an 11-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 6-year-old. So I'm open to them as long as, you know, they behave and the parents watch them.
Yes.
And we will have things for them to do, like drawing. But it's something that it's nice to see. There's a lot of people who are happy we're back. The community suffered a lot in the last few years. And you live here, and I think a lot of your listeners live here in the Bay Area, and the best way to support Sonoma County and the communities affected by the fires, actually visit them and eat in their restaurants and visit their tasting rooms and stay in their hotels, because most of Sonoma County has been unaffected, except for emotionally, by the fires, mentally and emotionally.
Yeah, there's nothing to fear about coming up here, and we could use everyone's support.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, you know. Sonoma County is an amazing place with redwood trees and the coasts and wine and beer and now cannabis.
Right.
You have to have a show called On the Cannabis Road.
Believe me, I've thought of that. When is the grand opening, by the way? Has that happened yet?
We're doing the soft opening. We're trying to find a good way to welcome the community back. We can't do a one-day event here because I think it would be too busy and it might not be a good experience for everybody. So we still haven't figured it out, but in the spring, I'll reach out to you and let you know what the plan is, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. Well, we'll talk and see you soon.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Owner and family member Renee Bick of the newly reopened Paradise Ridge Winery in Santa Rosa. The Kenwood location has continued to serve customers and remains open. A couple of things I didn't have time to share are the Santa Rosa location has a new VIP room, and they will continue their wine and sunset events, music, food trucks, and all that many people have come to love about spending time in paradise. You can see an artist rendering of the new tasting and hospitality building and get more details at prwinery.com. Up next, you'll hear about Italian varietals from winery owners, the Ramazzottis, as On the Wine Road continues. Welcome back to On the Wine Road here on KSRO. I'm Jeff Davis. January 30th and February 1st, the Zinfandel advocates and producers once again present ZinFest in San Francisco. So in the coming weeks, you'll hear from several Zinfandel producers. This week, it's the Ramazzottis. I visited their tasting room in Geyserville a couple of days ago. I met Joe and Norma and their son Travis, and it didn't take long to decide to do the interview next door at Diavola Pizzeria. I thought it was fitting. There were people conversing, drinking wine, enjoying pizza, just like a crowded Italian family dining table.
I agree. Yeah, this is perfect. And the food here is wonderful, too. So the pizza goes perfect with the wine.
Thank you for bringing the wine over, and we're going to have a little pizza here in a little bit after the interview. Tell me about, one region in Italy I'm not familiar with is the La Marca.
La Marca is right on the Adriatic seaside, and the main grape there that's very popular is Verdicchio, Verdicchio de Castelli de Jesi. And right now I'm trying to find cuttings to put some in for ourselves and stuff. So I'd love to grow it here in the United States and California.
And that's where your father emigrated from back in 1958?
Exactly. And I was born in Italy and came over when I was 8 years old with the family and stuff. And we were so lucky. My aunt had a pruning grape branch out on Dry Creek. And when I got here, we had to start picking prunes. I had never seen a prune in my life, but there we were picking prunes. So,
how old were you then?
8.
Yeah, those family businesses, they get you started early, don't
25
you?
Cents a box.
Well, at least they paid you. And I love the term that you use on your website, and they use, I guess, in Italy, is la terra, right? Like terroir in
yes.
French, same
yes,
kind of thing.
Exactly.
What the land has to offer, the earth and its gifts, and you certainly appreciate what that is.
We started from the beginning, you know, growing the grapes and stuff. So, and again, everything had to come from the dirt and the land. So that's where this all started for me and stuff.
So your father was also winemaking in Italy before he came over?
No, actually, he worked for the railroad. He was a welder for the railroad in Italy, and which was a good job in Italy. And but when he got here, he had to learn a lot himself, how to operate the equipment, because he never drove in Italy. You rode a bicycle everywhere there. And, of course, he had to learn all about the vineyards and grapes and stuff. But he had a good teacher here when we got here. All these old Italians in Dry Creek really helped my dad out and stuff. So,
yeah, you could throw a rock in this area, both toward Dry Creek and also Alexander Valley, and hit an Italian pretty easily.
Oh, yeah. No, they were all over the place.
Well, Italian-Swiss colony certainly brought many to this area.
Quite a few. In fact, my dad did a few jobs for Italian Swiss Colony, some welding jobs for him and stuff at the time. And because you never made any money in prunes, so you had to do some off ranch work and stuff. So,
did he know the Segacios back then? I imagine
he did. He knew the Segacios very well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just did a story recently on them, and I think it was Ed's father who had quite a history at Italian Swiss Colony.
Yes. Yes, he did. And I've got to know the Segacios very well, the whole family, myself.
I
used to sell them grapes, actually. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got into the business about, what, 1975?
I started with the old vineyard in 75, but then when I first got out of college, then I went and did some other things and got back into it in 1982. That's when I moved back from Santa Rosa. I lived in Santa Rosa for a while, then moved back, got back into the business in 1982. And then from then on, all we did was farm and stuff. So,
but eventually, you finally got into winemaking. Huh?
Well, again, 2000, 2001, I couldn't sell the grapes. After all these years with so many wineries, 10, 15 years of being with them, the contracts came up and they didn't renew them. So then I was stuck with all this grape and didn't know what to do with it. So I started the little winery. We started small, but every year it grew and grew and grew. But now, you know, we're back into the real selling. I still sell to almost 18 different wineries, what little I make, about between 400 and 500 tons a year.
Great. Yeah, you said you manage about, what's it, 125?
120 acres, yeah. We have two long-term leases still, and then the rest is management. So about 80 acres in leases and about 60 in management, 40 in management.
He's Joe Ramazzotti of Geyserville's Ramazzotti Wines. When I return, you'll meet Joe's son, the third-generation Ramazzotti to live in NorCal, and he'll give you a rundown of all the Italian and rare varietals they bottle. On the Wine Road continues after this. We're back. I'm Jeff Davis, and we are on the wine road. In an effort to promote California's heritage grape, Zinfandel, and Zapp's upcoming Zinfandel experience in San Francisco at the end of the month, I'll be talking with a variety of Zinfandel producers, and that includes the Ramazzottis of Geyserville. Joe Ramazzotti was telling me about the ebb and flow of the wine business since their winemaking began in 2002, and that's where I'll pick up the conversation.
The winery started doing well, and Travis came back, and our tasting room has been our savior, really. 75% of our sales of wine comes from that tasting room and our club membership. And then he's gotten into a bunch of restaurants, so about 25%. And so we're only in between the tasting room and restaurants. We're not in any store or anything like that.
How many cases are you doing now?
It's about 5,000 cases a year. Yeah.
Well, that's respectable. I mean, it's still boutique, but gosh, there's so many out there who are just doing like 2,000. Yeah. So,
if you saw it stacked in a warehouse, you'd say, how in the hell are we ever going to sell all this wine?
You think that every year, don't you?
Every year.
Thank goodness Travis is here to help out.
Absolutely.
Huh? So you're getting out there and pounding the pavement, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the restaurant and wholesale business is pretty competitive, obviously, in this area. So we found a pretty good niche with some of these boutique Italian varieties that we make that really are, especially with restaurants and bar-style restaurants, that are very food-friendly, very soft, so you can really pair them with or without food. And people seem to respond very well with them. So we're in about 45 to 50 restaurants in between Cloverdale and the Marin area at any given time. So we usually wholesale, we have typically out of the tasting room, we have about 12 different SKUs, 12 different wines that we make, and we wholesale about 6 to 7 of those, kind of depending on each individual restaurant, what their needs are, how their menu pairs. So yeah, each individual restaurant has its own tasting and menu.
Well, Italian wines certainly do make good restaurant wines, and it goes well with food. And why don't you give me a list of the wines that you are crafting?
Oh, guys, as far as our whites, we do, as far as one Italian variety of white is our Pinot Grigio. Very unique style Pinot Grigio, quite a bit darker than people are typically used to. Instead of being so clean and crisp, actually more of these green pear, green apple notes, and much more creamy mid-palate mouthfeel. Very unique style. Then we make a really nice Alexander Valley Sauvignon Blanc. Not so citric and grassy, much more of the honeysuckle and melon flavor. So again, a very unique style Sauvignon Blanc. Then we have our Chardonnay, which really is still, even though we make these unique varieties, still the king of our white wines. A little partial malolactic, but really clean and crisp, all neutral oak barrel fermented. Again, very unique style. Then our rosé, we stayed very local with our 100% Zinfandel rosé. Half and half Saunier bleed off Zinfandel rosé. So you get that nice, clean, crisp acidity, but also this beautiful, beautiful wild strawberry. So it really makes a very... very nice pairing for really spicy food. So this is one of our most popular wines that we have here at Diavola, actually.
Yeah, your dad was saying, goes good over here with the pizza.
It just pairs nicely with all their pizza dishes, especially their house-made Calabrian spicy chili oil here. Really, really pairs nicely with it. Then as far as our red wines go, no Pinot Noirs. We stay pretty true to our area up here in Dry Creek in Alexander Valley, so no Pinot Noirs. Instead, we specialize in our two estate-grown Italian varieties, 100% Barbera, 100% Sangiovese. The Barbera, very small production, only about 100 to 150 cases a year. Sangiovese, a little bit more, 200 to 250 a year. But both, they grow on my parents' beautiful home estate out in Dry Creek facing west, so really steep hillside they grow on, nice sun exposure, good hard rocky gravel soil. So these vines really struggle producing these very bright red cherry flavors, just how you'd find them in the regions in Italy.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the Sangiovese we brought over here today, and so we don't have the pizza yet, but I'm looking forward to see how that pairs with the pizza. And you have a Super Tuscan, too, one of my other favorites.
So the Super Tuscan blend, when did you guys first make that? 2006 or 2007? 2005. So that's a Sangiovese-based Super Tuscan blend. The exact percentage of Sangiovese switches slightly year to year, but it's predominantly 60-65% Sangiovese with Cabernet, Merlot, Syrah, Cab Franc. One of the drier wines that we make, but really meant to be your Italian food dish pairing wine. A little bit drier, a little bit higher acid to really complement those red tomato sauce, fatty pork sausage dishes. So really complimentary food wine.
And of course, you have some Zinfandel.
Of course, yeah. This being a Zap and Zinx featured interview here, so we do make two Zinfandel red wines, one from Alexander Valley, one from Dry Creek. The Alexander Valley being 100% single vineyard Alexander Valley Zin, but again, stays very true to our style. Very light and fruity. It's not such a high alcohol bomb. It's got this beautiful wild cherry notes to it, and just a little subtle white pepper on the nose. So it's got that nice spice people like, but really a very soft Zinfandel. And then the Dry Creek Zinfandel, that's truly our flagship wine. So what this is a co-fermented Zinfandel blend. So this is the old Dry Creek field blend, co-fermented blend of the old Dry Creek Italians. 75 to 76% Zinfandel picked with Petit Sirah, Carignan, Alicante Boucher, and an old Swiss white variety called Chasse's Doré. All that gets all picked together, crushed together, fermented together. Very unique style, actually a pretty famous blend of this region here in Dry Creek and Alexander Valley.
Now, what does that white Swiss variety bring to the mix?
So, the Italians would always throw in this white grape in with the Zinfandel because actually, molecularly, that white grape actually draws more color out of those Zinfandel skins. So, Zinfandel is always typically such a light, kind of colorless variety. That goes along with the Petit Sirah and the Carignan, some of these heavier, darker varieties, especially the Alicante, to really darken up that light Zinfandel.
I guess it's kind of similar in a way to the Viognier and the Syrah,
yes, exactly,
you know.
Exactly.
But from what I thought was that was more for the aroma and perfuminess of.
Well, Viognier is very aromatic and perfumey, so that was the reason from the Viognier. The Chasse's Doré is such an incredible variety. I wish more people could see it. It's just this huge. It almost looks like a white table grape. And we've got about 25 to 30 of those plants in my grandmother's tomato garden. That's where we get our Chasse's Doré.
I was going to ask where you get those from, but it's in your mom's garden, huh?
Well, I saved a few vines, and then I've been making my own vines from them, and they're actually common stock, so we lose a couple every year or so, but I keep replanting. I make more, and we're planning on planting a little bit more of it. I'm only getting about 400 pounds, and I need probably a little bit more to go in with that Ricordo. So,
the name of that blend we call Ricordo, which in Italian is I remember, or actually it's a memory in Italian, in remembrance and in homage to my grandfather and the old Italians who used to make this in their basements as home winemakers.
And on that note, I'm going to have to remember Golden Chasselas, or Chasselas Doré, even Chasselas Blanc, a variety new to me. They're Travis and Joe Ramazzotti. We'll talk a little more about Zinfandel and the upcoming Zinx 2020 when we continue on the Wine Road. Welcome back to my travels on the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis, and I'm interviewing Travis and Joe Ramazzotti of Geyserville's Ramazzotti Wines, next door to their tasting room at Diavola Pizzeria. We drank their delightful Sangiovese while I snacked on some wonderful pizza. As I often do, I asked Travis, the third-generation Ramazzotti to live in Sonoma County and second-generation family member at the winery, if he feels a bit of pressure to keep the family business on track.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a very competitive market. I mean, I'm out every day looking at everybody's different wines, and there's just so many people out there making amazing wines. So it's a difficult task. How do you differentiate yourself? How do you find your niche? How do you make your wines different yet good, and that people want to keep coming back? And it's all marketing and packaging and how people experience your wines in your tasting room. The tasting room is truly the biggest, from what I've learned and what I've got to experience. People's environments in their tasting room, what they experience, the people in there, that's what they remember. The wines just kind of complement that experience.
So yeah, this is mentioning the family. This is a true family business, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're a pretty small production between my father and I, my mother working in the tasting room and in the vineyards and the winery. My Aunt Marie works in the tasting room with us. We have one employee, Lisa. She's amazing. She's pretty much family now. And then two gentlemen that work in our winery with us, Matt Johnson, our master cellar, and then Andy D'Agostino is our chemist, and we all four of us make all the wines together. It really is a really team project. Whenever we do any blends or any winemaking, we do make all decisions together.
I also understand you have another couple that are helping you out, and no surprise, they're Italian.
Mel and Patty, of course. About 4 years ago, we were really struggling to make it all go, and I met Mel at a restaurant at Biabacci, and we hit it off right away, and I told him, he says, he loved my wine. He said, you need a partner in this business? And I just happened to say, oh, yeah, sure. And he goes, the next day, here he comes. He says, I want to be involved. Wow. And it, after that, it's been the same. They're wonderful. They're from Stockton. And they've been just great partners from then on. They let me do everything I want to do, but yet they want to be involved. And they've been the best partners a guy could ever have.
Their last name is Ratto, so it's a good Italian.
It is a good Italian name. Mel was involved in construction in the Stockton area in the Central Valley for years, and that's where he did his business. But now he's retired, and he wants to be involved in the wine business. And how lucky are we?
Yeah, sounds like a guardian angel was sent to you.
A guardian angel was sent to me.
So, Travis, you're telling me you're new to ZAP, the Zinfandel Advocates and Producers, and obviously this year you're going to be heading down to the ZinX 2020 at the end of the month, and I'm sure you're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, they've been hyping it up pretty good. It's ZAP's most popular event throughout the year. They do have the ZinX in New York as well, but this seems to be their premier event. So, yeah, they've been getting us pretty excited for it. And so I'm going to actually be participating in their Thursday event, which is the media and trade show tasting.
Sorry, listeners, you cannot attend that one.
And then also, of course, my father and I will be doing the grand tasting on Saturday the 1st. Yeah.
That is quite a Zinfandel Fest. I mean, true to the name, it is just an incredible festival there. And a lot of people attend and love to try the great number of Zinfandels we have in the area.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see. I hope I'm glad there's two of us there, so I get a chance to walk around and meet all the other members and see really all the. There's so many different regions of California that are producing amazing Zinfandel: the Sierra Foothills, Paso Robles, Mendocino, and then of course us here in Dry Creek Valley. So it'll be really interesting to see and meet all the other members.
You were telling me earlier that the organization of ZAP is very helpful to you as a Zinfandel and Italian heritage grower.
Correct. Yeah, they. I've only just 3 months being a part of their group, and they've really put a lot of resources at my disposal, put a lot of connections at my hands, and have been very helpful in getting me introduced to a lot of the right people and really trying to help push our brand and the expansion of Zinfandel to people who are interested. Yeah, it's been great.
So, Joe, is your real name Giuseppe, too?
It is Giuseppe.
Okay. Well, Giuseppe and Travis, it was a pleasure sitting here with you, and I think it's time to order some pizza and move on with the day.
Absolutely, and thank you. This has been wonderful.
If you enjoy Zinfandel, don't miss ZAPS, the Zinfandel Advocates and Producers, Zinfandel Experience, ZinX 2020, January 31st and February 1st in San Francisco. Next week, I'll have two pair of tickets to give away. Get more details at zinfandel.org. That brings this week's travels to a close. For more interviews, check out onthewineroad.com and on Facebook at On the Wine Road. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, and I'll catch you back here next Saturday on the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis.